Ever wondered why Russia seems perpetually paranoid about its western borders? Or why China is so obsessed with controlling Tibet? Tim Marshall's Prisoners of Geography provides the compelling answer. Leaders throughout history have been constrained by the physical features of our planet. The mountains, rivers, deserts, and seas that surround nations act as prison bars, limiting choices and shaping conflicts in ways we rarely consider. This international bestseller, which has sold over 1 million copies worldwide and been translated into 21 languages, has transformed how political and military leaders think about global affairs. Even Barack Obama reportedly kept a copy on his desk during his presidency, recognizing how Marshall's insights illuminate the why behind headlines that often seem baffling. As we navigate an increasingly complex geopolitical landscape, understanding these geographical imperatives becomes not just fascinating, but essential for making sense of our world. Russia's vast territory, spanning 11 time zones and covering 6 million square miles, creates a paradox: immense size coupled with profound vulnerability. The key to understanding Russia lies in the North European plain, a corridor that begins just 300 miles wide near Poland, but widens to 2,000 miles at Russia's western border. This flatland has served as an invasion route for centuries, with Poles 1605, Swedes 1708, French 1812, and Germans 1914-1941 all marching toward Moscow across this undefended expanse. This geographic reality has shaped Russian strategy for centuries. When Mongols devastated Kiev and Rus in the 13th century, Russian civilization relocated to the flatlands around Moscow. From there, leaders from Ivan the Terrible to Vladimir Putin have implemented the same fundamental strategy: expand outward to create buffer zones. Russia pushed east to the Urals, south to the Caspian, north toward the Arctic, and most critically, westward to incorporate Ukraine and the Baltic states. This expansion created a protective ring around Moscow, from the Arctic through the Baltics, Ukraine, the Carpathians, Black Sea, Caucasus, Caspian, and back to the Urals. Yet despite being the world's largest country, Russia suffers from another geographic curse: the lack of warm water ports with direct ocean access. Murmansk freezes for months each year, while Vladivostok remains ice-locked for 4 months and is enclosed by the Japanese-dominated Sea of Japan. Even Sevastopol in Crimea faces restrictions through the Turkish-controlled Bosporus. Peter the Great recognized this vulnerability in 1725, advising his descendants to approach Constantinople and India to become true sovereign of the world. This port dilemma explains much of Russia's modern behavior. When Ukraine's pro-Russian president was toppled in 2013, Putin faced an existential choice: allowing a pro-Western Ukraine potentially hosting NATO forces near Moscow, or securing Russia's vital interests. He annexed Crimea to protect Sevastopol's naval base and encourage separatist uprisings in eastern Ukraine. Rather than occupying all of Ukraine, Russia maintains pressure through these separatist regions and energy leverage, ensuring Ukraine remains unstable enough to prevent NATO membership. Russia's most powerful non-nuclear weapon is energy dependency. As the world's second-largest natural gas supplier, Russia leverages this resource to influence European politics, offering better prices to friendly nations. Many European countries depend heavily on Russian energy: Latvia, Slovakia, Finland, and Estonia 100%, Czech Republic, Bulgaria, and Lithuania 80%, and Germany's 50% dependency partly explains its reluctance to criticize Moscow compared to Britain's mere 13% reliance. Despite global reach and nuclear arsenal, Russia faces significant challenges, particularly demographics, with male life expectancy below 65 years and a population of only 144 million. Yet from Ivan the Terrible to Vladimir Putin, Russian leaders confront the same geographic prison: frozen ports and the vulnerable North European plain. China's 4,000-year civilization began in the North China Plain, a fertile 160,000-square-mile lowland around the Yellow and Yangtze rivers. This heartland, comparable to Egypt's Nile Valley, became one of the world's most densely populated regions. Natural boundaries defined ancient China: the Gobi Desert to the north, the Tibetan Plateau and Himalayas to the west, and the sea to the southeast and south. From this cradle emerged the Han people, now comprising over 90% of China's population. Though divided by regional languages like Mandarin and Cantonese, they share ethnicity and a geopolitical imperative to protect the heartland. About 1 billion people inhabit this region, an area half the size of the United States. Early Chinese dynasties, feeling threatened by surrounding non-Han regions, adopted a strategy of attack as defense, seeking natural barriers for protection, a millennia-long process completed only with Tibet's annexation in 1951. China's modern borders provide formidable natural defenses. The Gobi Desert along Mongolia forms a massive early warning system against invasion. The Russian Far East border presents little threat with its sparse population. The mountainous borders with Vietnam, Laos, and Burma offer varying degrees of protection. And most significantly, the Himalayas create a natural Great Wall separating China from India. China's control of Tibet stems from existential fear. If India controlled Tibet, it would command the high ground of the Tibetan Plateau and control the sources of China's three great rivers, the Yellow, Yangtze, and Mekong. Despite international criticism, China has built railways previously deemed impossible through Tibet's harsh terrain, bringing modernity but also millions of Han settlers who are gradually making Tibetans a minority in their homeland. Similarly, Xinjiang, China's largest province at twice the size of Texas, provides a crucial buffer zone bordering 8 countries. Home to Muslim Uyghurs who have twice declared independence as East Turkestan, the region remains restive. Following deadly riots in 2009, Beijing responded with suppression, economic investment, and Han migration. The province is strategically vital not only as a buffer protecting the heartland, but also for its oil reserves and nuclear testing sites. China will never cede these buffer territories, as they provide both security and markets essential for continued economic growth. The Communist Party's resistance to democracy stems from fears that free voting would fracture Han unity or create rural-urban conflicts, emboldening separatists in buffer zones. While historically a land power, China is now building a blue water navy to protect its economic interests and supply lines. Young sailors training on China's aircraft carriers represent the future admirals who may someday command global carrier groups. Meanwhile, China develops land-based anti-ship missile systems to deter American naval presence in the China Seas. China's access to the Pacific is hindered by what Beijing calls the First Island Chain and its 9 dash line marking territorial claims. These disputes over hundreds of tiny islands poison China's relations with neighbors while revealing its strategic imperative: control of vital shipping lanes that could be blockade in wartime. Whether emerging through the Sea of Japan or the East China Sea, Chinese vessels must navigate waters controlled by American allies. To reduce its dangerous reliance on the narrow Strait of Malacca, through which 80% of its energy supplies pass, China is investing in deep water ports across the Indian Ocean and building pipelines from Burma's coastline. This explains why America and Japan quickly established better relations with Burma when it began opening up in 2010. China's global infrastructure investments extend to ports in Kenya, railways in Angola, and dams in Ethiopia, while Chinese companies and workers spread worldwide. As China's economic interests expand globally, its military presence will inevitably follow to protect its citizens and investments. America's geographic advantages have made it the world's greatest power. Located between two oceans with friendly neighbors, the United States possesses unmatched natural features that have enabled its rise to dominance. The country can be divided into three distinct regions: the well-watered East Coast Plain leading to the Appalachians, the Great Plains stretching to the Rockies, containing the Mississippi Basin with its unparalleled network of navigable rivers, and finally the Western Mountains, deserts, and Pacific coastline. This geographic configuration created the potential for an unprecedented continental power. America's territorial growth happened with remarkable speed. Beginning with 13 colonies stretching 1,000 miles along the Atlantic, the young nation doubled its size through the Louisiana Purchase of 1803, acquiring the Mississippi Basin with more navigable river miles than the rest of the world combined. This inland water transport system became America's route to greatness, providing strategic depth and connecting the nation. Through encouraging settlement in contested areas, issuing the Monroe Doctrine warning European powers against New World colonization, supporting the Texas Revolution, and winning the Mexican-American War, the United States secured natural borders by 1848. Oceans east and west, the Rio Grande Desert south, and sparsely populated lakes and rocky terrain north. As America grew wealthy, it developed a blue water navy and began securing approaches to its coastlines. The Spanish-American War of 1898 removed the threat of Spanish control over Cuba, which could potentially block access to New Orleans via the Florida Straits, while gaining Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines. That same year, America annexed Hawaii, protecting approaches to its west coast. By 1903, America secured exclusive rights to the Panama Canal, cementing its control of regional trade routes. World War II transformed America's global position. As the last major power standing amid European ruins and Asian devastation, America projected its vast power worldwide, establishing forward bases and coaling stations formerly held by Britain. Through the Destroyers for Bases Agreement of 1940, Britain swapped naval bases across the Western Hemisphere for desperately needed warships. After Japan's defeat, America built concrete infrastructure across the Pacific, from Guam to Okinawa. The Marshall Plan cemented American influence in Europe, while NATO gave Washington effective command of Western military might. Only three potential challengers to American hegemony exist: a united Europe, Russia, and China. Europe's dream of ever closer union with common foreign and defense policy is slowly dying, with European powers spending little on defense. Russia, despite Putin's recent pushback, remains no more than a regional power, as Obama accurately, if provocatively, stated, still constrained by its geographical prison. China, while economically approaching parity, remains decades behind militarily and strategically. America is pivoting toward Asia, where half the world's population lives and which may account for half of global economic output by 2050. This involves establishing military presence, like the Marine Corps base in northern Australia, and demonstrating commitment to allies. Control of the Strait of Malacca, through which 12 million barrels of oil pass daily to China, gives America leverage through its relationships with Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. America's growing energy independence, projected to make it a net energy exporter by 2020, will diminish its focus on the Middle East. The American experiment with nation building appears over, as they underestimated tribal mentalities and the power of deep-seated historical fears in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. Despite fashionable predictions of America's decline, the country remains remarkably resilient, becoming energy self-sufficient, maintaining economic dominance, investing heavily in military research, sustaining population growth, and remaining the top destination for immigrants worldwide. The modern world springs from Europe, a region blessed with favorable climate, navigable rivers, natural harbors, and fertile soil that enabled population growth, surplus food, and the development of ideas and technology. Unlike the USA, Europe grew organically over millennia, divided by mountains, rivers, and valleys that created numerous nation-states with distinct linguistic regions. Europe's climate, fed by the Gulf Stream, provides ideal rainfall and soil for agriculture, allowing year-round work in temperatures that kill many germs. The continent has few natural disasters, while its navigable rivers empty into coastlines abundant with natural harbors. These factors led Europeans to create the first industrialized nation-states and conduct industrial-scale warfare. Europe's major rivers rarely connect, explaining why so many countries exist in a relatively small space. Rivers like the Danube, flowing through 18 countries, form natural borders and have given rise to capital cities like Vienna, Budapest, and Belgrade. These waterways defined ancient empires and, as those empires shrank, allowed distinct nations to emerge. Northern European countries have historically been richer than southern ones, industrializing earlier and maintaining easier trade links with wealthy neighbors. While some attribute this to Protestant versus Catholic influence, geography plays a crucial role. The North European plain provides massive agricultural potential and interconnected waterways for trade, while southern countries face mountainous terrain, poor soil, and limited market access. Greece has minimal agricultural land, steep coastlines, and is positioned at a peninsula tip nearly cut off from European land trade. The 2008 financial crisis exposed Europe's north-south divide, with northern countries as donors and southern countries as recipients. German-led austerity measures clashed with Greek resistance, reviving stereotypes and historical grievances. While post-WW2 generations have grown up with peace as the norm, potential conflicts still exist beneath the surface, particularly between Europeans and Russians. Poland's historical experience makes neither Germany nor Russia natural allies. Like France, Poland wants Germany contained within EU and NATO structures while remaining wary of Russia's resurgence. By joining NATO in 1999, Poland extended the alliance 400 miles closer to Moscow, a strategic move that Russia views with hostility. When threatened, Poles look to Washington rather than Brussels for security. The EU's stability hinges on the Franco-German relationship. France's geographic advantages were undermined when Germany unified in 1871, creating a larger, more industrialized neighbor on its vulnerable northeastern border. Germany, positioned between powerful France and Russia on the North European plain, feared simultaneous attacks from both directions, the German question that twice led to preemptive strikes against France. The EU was created so these nations would hug each other so tightly in a loving embrace that neither would be able to get an arm free with which to punch the other, transforming military competition into economic cooperation. Despite being less than 150 years old as a unified state, Germany has become Europe's indispensable power, economically dominant but hesitant in military affairs, still shadowed by World War II. Its rare diplomatic intervention in Ukraine revealed its eastward attention and delicate balancing act with Russia, on whom it depends for energy. Though anchored to Western Europe through EU and NATO, Germany's geographic position allows it to potentially pivot toward Moscow if European institutions weaken. As Europe reconsiders military spending amid economic constraints, strategists recognize that while historical threats have vanished, geographical realities remain unchanged. Helmut Kohl, haunted by war memories, emphasized that despite current difficulties, European unity's greatest achievement remains peace, something the post-war generation must not take for granted as they navigate financial crises and growing tensions. Africa, despite being humanity's birthplace, faces unique geographical challenges that have hindered its development. The continent's immense size, 3 times larger than the USA, contains diverse regions isolated from each other and the outside world. Africa's geography presents formidable obstacles: poor natural harbors despite beautiful beaches, rivers interrupted by waterfalls making navigation difficult, and isolation created by oceans and the Sahara Desert. Unlike Eurasia, where ideas and technology flowed east-west, Africa developed in isolation. The continent divides roughly into the Muslim-dominated top third, Mediterranean coast through Sahara to Sahel, and the more religiously diverse bottom two-thirds. Unlike Europe, with its navigable Rhine and Danube, Africa's great rivers, the Niger, Congo, Zambezi, and Nile, don't interconnect and feature rapids that hinder transportation. This prevented the formation of large trading regions and contributed to linguistic fragmentation with thousands of languages rather than unifying tongues. The lack of domesticable plants and animals, combined with challenging terrain and disease prevalence, further hindered development comparable to other continents. Arabs first crossed the Sahara by the 9th century, establishing themselves as far south as modern Nigeria and along the east coast. When Europeans arrived in the 15th century, they encountered few natural harbors and struggled to penetrate inland. Both Arabs and Europeans exploited Africa's resources and people, with the slave trade reaching massive proportions. European powers later carved artificial borders across the continent with little regard for ethnic realities, creating the political geography that still imprisons many Africans today. The 56 countries of modern Africa largely maintained colonial borders that ignored demographic realities. Libya exemplifies this problem, an artificial construct combining three distinct regions, Tripolitania, Cyrenaica, and Fezzan, that historically looked in different directions. The Democratic Republic of Congo represents an even greater failure of European line drawing, a massive country combining 200-plus ethnic groups across an area larger than Germany, France, and Spain combined, condemned to exploitation and conflict by its mineral wealth and artificial unity. The DRC remains trapped in a cycle of exploitation. Despite its vast natural wealth, cobalt, copper, diamonds, gold, and more, the country ranks 186th out of 187 countries on the UN Human Development Index. The Congo Wars, known as Africa's World War, have involved 9 neighboring countries and over 20 factions, killing tens of thousands directly and causing 6 million deaths from disease and malnutrition. Despite reduced fighting recently, the UN maintains its largest peacekeeping mission there, trying to hold together a country that was never properly whole. An egg without a chicken, a logical absurdity created by European colonialism. Africa's abundant resources have been both blessing and curse, attracting foreign exploitation while rarely benefiting local populations. Africa's great rivers, while not ideal for trade, offer hydroelectric potential that creates new conflicts. The Nile, flowing 4,100 miles through 10 countries, remains Egypt's lifeline. Egypt is the Nile, and the Nile is Egypt. Despite its regional power status and America's military aid, Egypt faces a potential water war with Ethiopia over the Grand Renaissance Dam being built with Chinese assistance on the Blue Nile. Nigeria, sub-Saharan Africa's largest oil producer and most populous nation at 177 million, struggles with the uneven distribution of oil wealth between its developed south and underdeveloped north. This exacerbates ethnic and religious tensions, fueling groups like Boko Haram in the Muslim northeast. China has rapidly expanded its presence across Africa, seeking resources and political stability to ensure their flow. Beijing and Chinese companies don't demand human rights improvements or economic reforms, making them attractive partners for African governments. China protects its African allies like Sudan at the UN Security Council, dismissing Western criticism as hypocritical given Europe's colonial history. South Africa stands as the continent's second-largest economy behind Nigeria and Southern Africa's powerhouse, with an economy 3 times Angola size. Its advantageous position at Africa's southern tip, with access to 2 oceans, natural resources, and malaria-free climate, allowed European colonists to settle and develop what became Southern Africa's economic hub. Despite its challenging geography and artificial borders, Africa is making significant progress. Rivers, once hampering trade, now generate hydroelectric power, while mineral and oil wealth has enriched countries even if distribution remains unequal. Poverty has declined as healthcare and education improve, with English language dominance providing an advantage in global markets. However, economic growth remains vulnerable to commodity price fluctuations. Manufacturing output stagnates at 1970s levels, and corruption persists alongside frozen conflicts. The Middle East's very name reflects European perspectives, as do its artificial borders drawn with ink that are now being redrawn in blood. Islamic State's propaganda showing a bulldozer erasing the Iraqi-Syrian border symbolizes this challenge to colonial boundaries. Before World War I, the region had fewer borders determined mainly by geography, with spaces governed according to ethnicity and religion rather than nation-states. The Ottoman Empire ruled the region from Istanbul without creating named nation-states, simply dividing areas into administrative vilayets based on tribal territories. When the empire collapsed, British diplomat Sir Mark Sykes drew a crude line across a map from Haifa to Kirkuk, establishing, with François-Georges Picot, a division of the region between British and French spheres of influence. This Sykes-Picot arrangement created artificial states like Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Israel, and Palestine, young, fragile entities that ignored traditional tribal and religious boundaries. Islam dominates the Middle East, but contains significant divisions. The Sunni-Shia split dates to 632 CE after Muhammad's death. With Sunnis, about 85% of Muslims globally, follow tribal traditions for succession, while Shia, the party of Ali, believe leadership should have passed through the Prophet's family. Both branches contain further divisions. Sunnis follow various scholarly traditions, including the strict Hanbali school favored in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, while Shia Islam includes Twelvers, Ismailis, Zaydis, and offshoots like Alawites and Druze. Colonial powers grouped these diverse religious communities into nation-states under dictators who typically favored their own religious branch and tribe. Iraq exemplifies the colonial legacy's destructive impact. While dictators maintained superficial unity through fear, people never truly unified under Iraqi identity. The Kurds were first to break away when dictatorship became unbearable, concentrated in northern provinces where they maintained distinct identity despite campaigns like Al-Anfal in 1988 that killed up to 100,000 Kurds. After Saddam's Kuwait invasion, Kurds seized their chance, establishing a de facto Kurdistan. Syria, another multi-faith state, fractured in civil war after 2011. Though majority Sunni Muslim, 70%, the country is ruled by the Alawite Assad clan, representing just 12% of the population. When nationwide uprising began in 2011, it reignited tensions from Hafez Assad's 1982 massacre of 30,000 in Hama. Syria has become a battleground for outside powers. Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah support government forces, while Arab countries back different opposition groups. The country appears destined for rule by competing warlords, with President Assad simply the most powerful among many. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict, though temporarily overshadowed by regional chaos, remains a persistent tragedy. After WW1, the British Mandate created Palestine from what the Ottomans called Philistina. Jews had historical ties to the land, but Arabs had been the majority for over 1,000 years. Jewish immigration increased dramatically after World War II, leading to the UN's 1948 partition plan, which Jews accepted and Arabs rejected. Jerusalem remains the most contentious issue. For Jews, it contains Abraham's sacrifice site and Solomon's temple. For Muslims, it houses Al-Aqsa, Islam's third holiest site. Iran, a non-Arabic Farsi-speaking nation larger than France, Germany, and UK combined, is naturally defended by two massive mountain ranges, the Zagros and Elburz, with deserts and salt plains in between. This geography has repelled invaders since the Mongols in 1219-21 and created a diverse population where only 60% speak Farsi. Iran's nuclear ambitions deeply concern Israel and Saudi Arabia, as a nuclear Iran would become the dominant regional power. The Saudi-Iranian rivalry represents the Middle East's Cold War, with each claiming religious leadership, Sunni versus Shia, and seeking regional dominance despite Saudi Arabia's smaller population. Turkey sits at the crossroads of Europe and Asia, neither fully accepted as European nor fully Middle Eastern. Despite embracing Western reforms under Atatürk in the 1920s, Turkey's EU membership remains elusive due to human rights concerns, economic disparities, and unspoken concerns about its Muslim majority. Turkey's strategic importance stems from controlling the Bosporus Strait, NATO's key to containing Russia's Black Sea Fleet. The Arab Spring was misunderstood by Western media, who focused on English-speaking liberal protesters while ignoring the complex internal struggles between religious beliefs, tribal links, and armed factions. Unlike Eastern Europe's 1989 transition from communism to democracy, Arab countries lacked democratic traditions and faced multiple competing directions: democracy, nationalism, strongman rule, and various forms of Islam. As America reduces its involvement in the region due to decreased energy dependence, China and India may fill the vacuum, while the Sykes-Picot borders continue to fracture in a long, bloody process. India and Pakistan share a 1,900-mile border and mutual antagonism, bristling with nuclear weapons that make their relationship a matter of life and death for tens of millions. With India's population approaching 1.3 billion versus Pakistan's 182 million, India outperforms its neighbor on nearly all economic and democratic indicators, while Pakistan seems to define itself through opposition to India. The Indian subcontinent forms a natural geographical frame bounded by the Bay of Bengal, Indian Ocean, and Arabian Sea to the south, with the Hindu Kush and Himalayas forming the northern border. Within this frame lie India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, and Bhutan. The subcontinent's vast size and diversity, with civilizations developing along major rivers like the Ganges, Brahmaputra, and Indus, has historically prevented strong central rule, creating distinct linguistic and cultural regions. When the British withdrew in 1947, the subcontinent was partitioned into India and Pakistan, triggering massive population movements and violence that killed at least 1 million people and displaced 15 million as Muslims fled to Pakistan while Hindus and Sikhs moved to India. Pakistan emerged as the weaker state from partition, inheriting just 17% of financial reserves, a troublesome Afghan frontier, and a divided territory, with West and East Pakistan separated by 1,000 miles of Indian territory. Unlike the geographically contiguous USA and Alaska, the only connection between Pakistan's two halves was Islam, leading to East Pakistan's eventual secession as Bangladesh in 1971. Pakistan's very name reveals its composition of distinct regions: Punjab, Afghania, Pashtun areas, Kashmir, Sindh, and Balochistan. Each has its own language and culture, creating nations within one state. Regional tensions persist, with Sindhs feeling like second-class citizens under Punjabi dominance, Pashtuns never fully accepting outside rule, and independence movements in Kashmir and Balochistan. Since partition, Pakistan and India have fought multiple wars, beginning with the 1947 Kashmir conflict that resulted in the disputed line of control. The Kashmir dispute remains central to their hostility, with strategic implications beyond national pride. Control of Kashmir would give India access to Central Asia and Afghanistan, while denying Pakistan a border with China. For Pakistan, controlling Kashmir would secure its water supply from the Indus River, which originates in Tibet but passes through Indian-controlled Kashmir before flowing through Pakistan. Pakistan's involvement in Afghanistan stems from its need for strategic depth against India. After 9/11, Pakistan was forced to cooperate with America's war on terror when Colin Powell told President Musharraf, "You are either with us or against us." Though Pakistan banned militant groups and accepted American drone strikes, elements within the Pakistani establishment continued supporting the Taliban. This double game resulted in devastating consequences: up to 50,000 Pakistani civilians killed, failed assassination attempts on Musharraf, and Benazir Bhutto's murder. India must multitask, managing Pakistan as its primary foreign policy concern while simultaneously emerging as a world power with 1.3 billion people. Its relationship with China is constrained by the Himalayan barrier, though friction exists over Tibet, where India hosts the Dalai Lama, and Arunachal Pradesh, which China claims as South Tibet. India also contends with numerous separatist movements within its borders, including Sikh nationalists and various groups in Assam and Nagaland, though none appear likely to succeed. Despite being often overshadowed by China's rise, India may rival China economically this century. With limited domestic energy resources, India has embarked on a look east policy, forging strategic relationships with Burma, the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, and Japan to counter China's regional dominance. India's well-equipped navy, though unable to match China's planned blue water fleet, is increasingly aligning with other powers, including a cautious partnership with the United States to monitor Chinese naval expansion through vital shipping lanes. The Arctic has become a strategic battleground as climate change melts ice caps, revealing valuable resources and new shipping routes. Russia dominates the region militarily, while other nations, particularly the USA, lack coherent Arctic strategies despite growing opportunities and challenges. The Arctic Ocean spans 5.4 million square miles, smaller than Russia but larger than most countries. The region includes territories from Canada, Finland, Greenland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, Sweden, and the USA. Its extreme climate ranges from brief 26°C summers to minus 45°C winters. Exploration history includes Greek mariner Pythias in 330 BCE, Henry Hudson's ill-fated journey, and the tragic Franklin expedition of 1845. Norwegian Roald Amundsen finally navigated the Northwest Passage in 1905, later flying over the North Pole in 1925. Satellite imaging confirms the Arctic ice cap is shrinking rapidly, causing coastal erosion, wildlife displacement, and ecosystem disruption. The melting creates a feedback loop through the albedo effect. Darker exposed land absorbs more heat than reflective ice, accelerating warming. This environmental transformation has global implications, threatening distant low-lying nations with rising sea levels. However, it also creates economic opportunities. The Northwest Passage is now navigable for several summer weeks annually, cutting shipping time between Europe and Asia by 40%. The region potentially holds 1,670 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, 44 billion barrels of natural gas liquids, and 90 billion barrels of oil, attracting energy giants despite extreme operational challenges. Arctic sovereignty claims are based on the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which grants nations exclusive economic rights extending 200 nautical miles from shore, potentially expandable to 350 miles with continental shelf evidence. Russia has aggressively asserted its claims, symbolically planting a titanium flag on the North Pole seabed in 2007. At least 9 legal disputes over Arctic sovereignty exist, creating potential for serious international tensions as resources become accessible. Russia's Arctic ambitions are unmistakable. Beyond planting their flag on the seabed, they've claimed the Lomonosov Ridge as an extension of Siberia's continental shelf, which problematically extends to the North Pole itself. President Putin has declared Arctic offshore fields our strategic reserve for the 21st century, backing this rhetoric with military might, constructing 6 new bases, reopening Cold War installations, and deploying 6,000 combat troops to the Murmansk region equipped with snowmobiles and hovercraft. Despite economic constraints elsewhere, Russia's Arctic defense budget continues to grow. Russia dominates Arctic infrastructure with 32 icebreakers, including 6 nuclear-powered vessels, and plans to launch the world's most powerful icebreaker by 2018, capable of smashing through 10-foot ice and towing 70,000-ton oil tankers. The United States, by stark contrast, has only 1 functioning heavy icebreaker, the USS Polar Star, down from 8 in the 1960s, with no plans to build more. This capability gap reveals the dramatic difference in Arctic prioritization between the powers. Multiple sovereignty disputes dot the Arctic landscape. The USA hasn't ratified the UN CLOS Treaty, effectively ceding 200,000 square miles of potential undersea territory. Canada and the USA dispute waterway classifications in the Canadian archipelago, while Russia refuses to ratify a 1990 maritime boundary agreement with the USA in the Bering Sea. Canada and Denmark maintain competing claims over Hans Island, with both nations periodically planting flags to assert sovereignty. Despite the new great game unfolding in the Arctic, the situation differs from historical territorial scrambles. The Arctic Council provides a forum for decision-making. International laws regulate disputes, and the harsh geography necessitates cooperation on issues like fishing rights, smuggling, terrorism, search and rescue, and environmental disasters. The region's extreme conditions make it a tough neighborhood where success may require collaboration. While competition for resources seems inevitable as the ice melts, the established diplomatic frameworks offer hope that Arctic development might proceed more rationally than previous territorial contests.